What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Teeing It Up, the number one sports podcast in the Southeast Michigan region. I'm your host, Conrad, the C of CNV. As always, a day earlier recording on the eve of history. Vladdy, the V of CNV, what's up?
I'm pissed right now. Nothing with any kind of with the weekend. Just watched Real Madrid play one of the most pathetic games I've seen in a while. Can't defend. Players are head cases. The coach is losing his mind. The board sucks and hasn't put a team together in a probably 6 or 7 years. So just kind of all things kind of going off the rails with kind of my favorite sports team, but is what it is. We'll talk about some of our other favorite sports teams. One of them bad, one of them good, but I'm doing well enough. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I don't really have any updates. Like I mentioned, we're recording a day early because on the eve of history. My class for tomorrow morning is canceled, so I'm gonna sleep in. I'm gonna try and stay up and watch. Not that I'm not a political guy really at all, but I'm just out of curiosity excited to stay up all night and watch tonight for absolutely no reason at all. It's actually quite depressing, regardless of who wins any of these elections. So, yeah, let's get into some lighter topics like sports. Today, we're going to do our usual college recap of the weekend, and we're going to start off with something a little different, previewing one of our favorite teams, one of my favorite sports teams, and that's the Michigan State Spartans basketball team. They previewed their season last night. They'll play again Thursday, and we wanted to give you a preview. Before they play the number one team in the country a week from today, the day we're recording that is 6 days from when this is out, because it'll be before we record next. So let's dive right into Michigan State basketball. I'll start with some of the lowest expectations a Tom Izzo team has had in a while, and that's saying something given how the last 4 seasons have kind of gone in East Lansing. Obviously, last year they come off a team that had a ton of veteran presence, came in with very high expectations, preseason number four, and really struggled to meet those expectations, barely making the tournament, not making it out of the first weekend after a second round loss. They come in this year with only one returning starter from that team, and a whole bunch of new faces. He finally goes into the transfer portal. Two of the starters are from the transfer portal. He has three new freshmen. It looks like really only one is going to be somewhat of an impact so far this year as far as minutes. But let's dive into it. I don't even really know what to say because I didn't get to watch it because it was on Big Ten Plus, which I didn't know existed until yesterday. And they beat Monmouth by 25 points. Nothing burger, Monmouth's bad team. You should do that at home to start the season. At least they start off 1-0, which is something last year's team couldn't say. I guess where should we start the preview for the Spartans?
I say maybe with the returners, and then we can move into the portal guys, and then you mentioned kind of the one freshman that we expect to have kind of an immediate impact.
Starting lineup wise, we'll start with the starters who started yesterday. It's Jaden Akins, and it should be Jaden Akins' team. He goes off for the big game yesterday with 23, 9, and 5. It's his senior year. He's, while had a good career as a Spartan, has for now the third straight season had the questions of will he take the next step to a great Spartan? And I think that's the expectation if this team wants to be inside of a top five or six seed, then he's got to take that next step and be the great Spartan. As far as other players, Jeremy Fears is going to. Looks like he's going to split the point right now with Trey Holloman, the junior now. Fears, obviously, after getting shot in December, showed some promise off the bench last year in the opening couple months before his season was ultimately ended by a bullet wound. He is also another name that I think people are looking to take a step up. He was relatively highly anticipated as a freshman, showed some promise. With AJ Hogard and Tyson Walker gone, it's going to be pretty much his point, like I said, with Trey Holloman. And then Xavier Booker, again, the third straight starter I'll mention, sophomore, came in as a five-star and was arguably the most controversial player on the roster last year with his own play, with the way that Izzo played him, the lack that he played him, and now starting at the four, I think people have some question marks there. Still not a big enough frame to truly be a starting five in the Big Ten, I think. He'll settle and probably plays a better role as a four. He could stretch it because of the way he could shoot the ball. But those are the starters I think that'll make some big impacts. Other than that, you look at the five spot with returners, Carson Cooper, Jackson Kohler, both juniors now. Carson Cooper didn't play much at all, actually, in this, which is interesting. Obviously, we'll get into why was Sipala the transfer. Jackson Kohler is a guy I look again to kind of, he's always had that offensive presence. He's slightly undersized to be a true five. I think he's only 6'8". But he has probably the most offensive promise on that team. He could shoot the ball, dribble the ball. And as far as the struggles, especially the last 2 years, have been inside scoring. I look particularly at, you know, it's been Mati Sissoko and Carson Cooper's kind of five spot the last 2 years. And now you look for a healthy Kohler who's been struggled to stay on the floor his first 2 seasons as a Spartan to maybe take a step into that role. That's really it for returners, unless you want to talk about like Nick Sanders and Greg Norman or
Not
Derek Norman.
particularly.
Greg Norman.
Just kind of maybe parrot some of what you had. I agree with the Akins thing, where I think that if this team is going to get where it wants to go and where we as the fans want them to be back, which is contending for Big Ten titles and making deep kind of tournament runs, it probably has to start with him. And I also do think that Jeremy Fears will probably have to take a much bigger step than maybe they planned for it, given what happened last year. Because while Akins is great and this and that, I don't think he really creates offense for himself. He's more of
No.
what can the point guard get for me, or what can the ball movement get for me, or how can I kind of just put up a jump shot. It's not a, I don't want, I can't believe I'm about to bring up
Not a
speed.
Tyson Walker.
Yeah, I was going to say it's not AJ Hogard going to the rim,
Oh,
but I was going to
okay.
say we don't really associate with that name anymore. So, yeah, it's
Yeah.
not Tyson Walker. He's not going to kind of run around like that and be able to get off shots. So, I do think Fears is going to have to take a bigger step. And I said this in the summer and at kind of in the spring as kind of our season ended, where if you're going to put the program's hopes on Jeremy Fears, he's gonna have to deliver. You mentioned Xavier Booker. I agree that he's probably better suited as a four. Even if he does put a frame out, I still think he might be better suited as a four, just because, like you mentioned, he can shoot, or we think he can. He was 0-for-4 from three, but the team as a whole
Yep.
was
Two for 10 from, yeah.
3 of 18 from deep for the team. Not great. That's gonna have to improve. But you know, this is why you play Monmouths and Santa Barbara's and whatever other bullshit schools we're about to run through for the first month and a half of the season. I mean,
Santa Barbara catching a stray. We don't play them.
yeah, you mentioned that the five spots, Kohler, Carson Cooper. I mean, okay. I remember the shows last year where it's like, how is Xavier Booker not playing over the three worst centers in Michigan State history? So I'm
Yeah.
not going to sit here and suddenly try and say good things about him, because I don't think anything's changed, but I am open to being wrong about that. Cohen Carr, the human highlight reel. We'll see what kind of,
Yeah, I forgot
I
him.
guess, what kind of role he can put together for himself, because I don't think he's a starter yet. I don't think he can shoot. I don't think he can kind of like he's genuinely a human highlighter. That's really all it is. He would be a Hall of Fame, like, if you remember Slam Ball growing up with the
Yeah.
trampolines on, like, the but he would be the greatest person ever for that. But I don't know what he turns into as a basketball player. So I'm interested to see how they use him, what his role is in the team. That's kind of it with me and the young guys. I guess Trey Holloman, I've never been the biggest fan. He had bright moments last year, but at the same time, I don't know if that was something that was ever going to be sustained. So,
Yeah, I look for him to kind of play that same role, and I think you'd be okay with that. As far as transfers, it's Frankie Fiddler, and what is his first, what is Zapala's first name?
Simon.
Seisman. Zapala, a bit of a surprise for a lot of people. He didn't get a ton of minutes on a group of five team. He's a veteran, older player. He's going to start at the five. From what I think he brings is something that this team has truly lacked in a seven, just a straight up 7-footer. In I'm gonna kind of be counterintuitive to why I think he works in a second here, talking about the overall outlook for this team. But he's going to work in that he's the first true big body that you've had that I think can body up other teams in the Big Ten's five, that maybe Mati Sissoko wasn't able to do, nor were obviously you've had the Cooper Kohler Sissoko train the last two seasons there. And at the very least, he'll provide that. Offensively, he had a nice night, 9 points, 8 rebounds last night, but I'm not sure how much he's going to bring come Big Ten play, which is another thing that's been an issue for this team the last few years, is getting points down low, getting points from their big guys. And the other one, Frankie Fiddler, I think he's got to be the second. He's got to be the second option behind Akins for scoring. It's the first stretch wing you've probably had since. Do we want to call Gabe Brown that?
Hawk. That's a name I haven't heard in a while.
And that was two, 3 years ago now. It's from what I've heard, he averaged 20 points again at a smaller school. Comes in veteran guy. He's only got the 1 year of eligibility left. Again, all signs that I've seen is maybe this isn't the best guy on the defensive side, but offensively, it's stretch wing, which is what we've mentioned is kind of the way this game goes now. It's a position that the Spartans have really lacked the last couple of years, and he's got to be able to be that second option scoring wise for them to be successful as well.
Yeah, not too much to add there. I want to say one thing about the Zapala. Is this the tallest guy Izzo's ever had? I don't recall us having a 7-footer ever.
Yeah, not in recent memory. Is it? Yeah, no,
Was
not in recent
Goran
memory.
Suton a 7-footer?
I don't even know who that is, so.
Oh, look at this casual over here, calls himself a Michigan State basketball fan, doesn't know Goran
So sorry.
Suton.
And then quickly, the freshmen, there's three names that are added to this roster: Kurt Tang, Jace Richardson, and what's the third guy's name? Something McCullough, who they're going to be redshirting this year. It doesn't look like Kurt Tang, who's kind of a stretch, kind of plays that wing position, is going to get much opportunity this year. It seems like Jace Richardson is really going to have an opportunity to kind of back up Fears to a large extent. He had a really nice night last night, second in the team in scoring. He was 4 for 5 in 22 minutes of action, played just as many minutes as Fears in that game. He was the highest recruit. I believe he was a 4-star somewhere in the 30s in the country. He's really the only person I see. Kertang will kind of play like a Cohen Carr role last year, it seems like. And obviously McCullough's going to get redshirted, but Jace Richardson should be your backup to Jeremy Fears, and it will kind of be a revolving door of Fears, Richardson, and Holloman at that point for the season.
Lovely. Oh boy.
Yeah,
How far
I
we've
guess
fallen.
overall outlook, like, I actually think this team is going to be the same as last year, maybe even slightly better, because the teams that Izzo seems to win with are these teams that have little to no expectations. Those are the teams he seems to do better with. They're a young team that I think like will actually listen to him maybe more than like an AJ Cole Hogard, what we call in their fifth season of like I'm done listening to Izzo type stuff. So I think from that perspective, but at the same time, that means it's more on Izzo to kind of get a young roster ready for March. The schedule isn't quite as bad in November as December as it's been in past years. You have the potential to play Kansas. Well, not the potential. They will play Kansas. They'll play an average Colorado team in Maui, which opens up the if they win that game, they would likely play UConn, which I'm not even going to get to who they would play after that because that's a loss. You play a frisky Oakland team and a frisky FAU team without Dusty May now. It's a much easier non-conference schedule, which again almost leaves you less breathing room as far as RPI and all that crap come tournament time. This team, I'm going to say they're going to be a 7 seed this year, and they again will not make it out of the first weekend. And I'm going to go on a limb and say this is Izzo's last year of coaching.
Interesting. So you mentioned that the schedule, that is something I wanted to get to. This is not the murderer's row where we're going to play teams on an aircraft carrier and it's back to back top 10 matchups and what he's done in the past. And I actually don't think that really has any effect to RPI and those power KenPom bullshits because we've proven that we're above that. We know the tournament likes money. We know they like that. And it doesn't matter how bad Michigan State is, they're going to be in the tournament. We saw it in 2021. We saw it
Yeah.
last year. Those were two teams that were not tournament teams. But because they have a logo, because they have a recognizable name, and because they can draw some audience, they're going to put them in there knowing, oh, it doesn't fucking matter anyway because the team sucks. So. I mean, like, cool. I guess we'll go into this tournament a little bit, but with a higher record. Maybe we won't have 14 losses this year going into the tournament. Maybe we only have 10. But I agree with you. I think I see an absolute ceiling of like a 6 seed. I probably have a somewhere, like you say, a 7, 8, 9, 10 in that kind of just fluctuation range. And as you mentioned, you're going to come up against a buzzsaw in the second week or the second round if you even get there, and you're going to lose. So that I'm absolute in your boat. I actually don't think this is Izzo's last year. You kind of always see his kind of, I was going to say podcast. No, you always see his interview questions where he's like, oh, I plan on coaching for a very long time. He's got that lifetime contract where it's like, Tom, just put your name down and everything else sorts itself out. We don't really have discussions with you anymore for contracts. We just keep going. I don't see him leaving.
The
Maybe
only
that's
thing that I agree with you on is that this is a relatively young team. Like, their only senior is Jaden Akins and the two transfers. So it's a younger group that maybe he wants to finish the job with over the next couple of years, I could see. But yeah, I don't, I just think like he's just getting more and more tired with coaching today in today's world.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I've been vocal with my thoughts on his continued involvement with Michigan State and what that means for the long-term health of the program. But we'll save that for April podcast when we're yelling again. don't need to do that right now.
Let's transition to another Michigan State team. Indiana 47, Michigan State 10 in football this week. We didn't watch it. I don't really have many comments on it. They started off 10-0. You thought maybe it'd be frisky. I think like while you can diss Michigan State for like an empty stadium even at kickoff, and you're losing to programs like Indiana, and this is not just you don't lose like this at home at all if you're Michigan State. I do think Indiana is a legit team, and this is just a bad Michigan State team. I've said it, and I'll say it again. Not making excuses because Aiden Childs seems to have taken multiple steps back from the Iowa game. It seems like the defense has taken multiple steps back since the Iowa game. And now you're in a position where, outlook-wise, you have to win two of your next three just to be bowl eligible.
I think giving up a 47-0 run is unacceptable. That's when like it doesn't happen. That you start kind of questioning if the players quit when something like that happens. So that's bad. That I think that's kind of the first sign where I've had where I'm a little bit, I'm again not questioning, but I'm just a little concerned with Jonathan Smith, where again, you cannot give up 47 straight points to Indiana. And I'm actually going to push back against you on this Indiana team here in a second, but I'll push some narratives. Aiden Childs with two more interceptions. I kind of saw some of the videos after the fact, and I think the first one was just a stupid read by him where he didn't see a linebacker, and then you had a nice little volleyball interception after a tip. And then the second one, he's kind of made this mistake before. If you're throwing an out route, the ball has to be out. It has to be where only the receiver can catch it. Now, this doesn't discredit the fact that it was a great play by the Indiana corner to jump the route, but you are the quarterback. You need to make sure that even if the route is jumped, it is not going to get intercepted. So that's kind of the two interceptions there. Yeah, I don't have much else to say because we didn't watch this. Is what it is. So I do want to quickly get to the Indiana thing because I know like I'd at least let's start this. What do you
I
mean
think
by
you're
me?
letting the title dictate your opinions here. The title of Indiana dictate your opinions.
Maybe, but can I give you a counterpoint?
They haven't played anybody.
They have one of the worst schedules I've ever seen. So we're gonna
But they're not, it's not like
they're
they're
killing them.
like.
They're killing them. Yes, cool. But just listen. Listen. If Michigan State plays FIU, do they win or lose?
When?
If Michigan State plays Western Illinois, do they win or lose?
When?
If they play UCLA, do they win or lose?
Lose.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
I think all our friend group is so high on this Michigan State
Hold
team
on, no,
that's
no, no.
played
This is not actually, this isn't
one
even,
good game
hold
this
on.
entire
Wait,
season.
wait. Just, I'm not even making this about Michigan State. I'm making it about
UCLA's bad.
UCLA.
I know
UCLA
that.
sucks. I think you beat UCLA. Does Michigan State beat Charlotte?
Yes.
Does Michigan State beat Maryland? Yes, we saw it happen.
Yep.
Does Michigan State beat Northwestern?
Probably.
So, getting into their next three games, if Michigan State's playing Indiana schedule, we're 6-0. And it
Okay.
changes perception. Now, does Michigan State beat Nebraska?
Probably not.
50-50, probably not. Does Michigan State beat Washington? 50-50, probably not.
Probably not, but maybe.
So let's say you go 1-1 in those two games, and then obviously the Indiana game where they play
You can't.
themselves, they finally
Yeah.
get to Indiana and you get killed. This Michigan State team that we're looking at that is 4-5 could be 7-2 with Indiana's schedule, and that completely changes perception. So
Yeah.
I'm not, again, I completely agree. Indiana is killing people. They've covered every single number, obviously, for the betting people, and like good teams win, great teams cover. They're murdering people. I understand. It's just, I don't know how to sit there and put stock into this because you're right. The Indiana, the name, like you strip the logos away and the colors, maybe I change my mind, but I refuse to believe that Indiana football can be good.
But the ultimate, like, it doesn't bother me so much because, like, they're gonna play Michigan next week, who's obviously not a great team by any stretch of the imagination, but compared to what you just said, is another test. And then they're gonna have the ultimate test with
Yep.
Ohio State in 2 weeks,
Yes.
so it's gonna answer itself.
Agree. I'm just trying to like I'm kind of doing this maybe more to lead into the Michigan State whole perception of Jonathan Smith thing where scheduling matters so much, and especially with the way these super mega duper conferences where you have 45 different teams and you're only going to see half of them every other year.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do this already, but I think there needs to be some kind of tier system within the conferences where you
You play
can't
a certain
have,
amount at each tier or something like that.
because
Yeah.
like you can't have an Ohio State team that plays an Oregon, an Indiana, and a Penn State, and then you have an Indiana team that's walking around playing my mom and dad and
Yeah.
some local high schools, and at the end of the day, that's how you give up a conference title spot. So
What about like kind of like the NFL does, like based off the prior year, you play a certain schedule?
I'm sure the algorithms and the smarter people than me could come up with that, and I think that is something they should expand, or they
So
could look
I was
into
thinking of
probably.
this with Indiana though. There's a very realistic chance with that schedule they go 11-1 and are left out. Because
Absolutely.
you would have Ohio State and Oregon in the Big Ten championship. Both of those are in. And then you'd theoretically, assuming nothing happens to Penn State, because they also have a pretty easy rest of the schedule, 11-1 Penn State with based off who they played is going to make it in over 11-1 Indiana.
Correct. I think that's
And
I
I
think
don't
those
see five Big Ten teams making it. So,
agree. I also think that Indiana,
or four Big Ten teams, sorry.
I actually think there's a chance, but it depends on what happens with the ACC and the Big 12. So in the ACC, if Miami runs the table, I think the ACC is a one bid conference. I don't think any
Yep.
Clemson losing again, I don't think anyone's left to be able to kind of say, oh, I mean, SMU, really? I don't think so. A 12-0, or a 13-0 Miami team, I think will be the only ACC school in. You'll then turn your kind of attention to the Big 12, where the Big 12 had a disastrous weekend for their
Yeah.
getting multiple teams in, where
They're now
Kansas
BYU
State
or bust.
loses, Iowa State loses, and I mean Colorado's going to knock on the door potentially
Yeah.
make a Big 12 title. We'll talk about that later, but I think Indiana at 11-1, you are absolutely correct. They're going to be sitting there on the couch hoping things bounce their way so they can be like the 11 seed.
That's, I don't know. With that said, though, you're right, because there's a very realistic chance the ACC is one bid. And now, like you said, with the Big 12, like Miami, BYU run the table. That's your 3-4 seeds. And you're going to
Notre
have to
Dame.
have four SEC teams, Notre Dame, a group of five school, which is looking like it's going to be a two-loss Boise State team. So now that's what we're at, 4, 7, 9. We're at 10 or 11 schools there already. So, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Actually, the first playoff rankings also come out tonight as we're recording, or not as we record this, but later. So instead of watching the states give in their predictions, maybe we can watch the committee tell the AP to go fuck themselves and put out real polls, even though the committee is not
Yeah.
very good at that either. But to the rest of college football, enough with the Indiana talk. It sounds like we're a Bloomington podcast, not an East Lansing one.
Yeah.
Ohio State, Penn State played one of the sloppier games, I think.
Big Ten football.
Yeah, I mean, I was able to watch a little bit of this. What's his face? Will Howard donates 10 points. 10 points, donates 7 points right off the bat. Penn State's flying. And then Penn State just forgets how to play the sport with some of the most insane play calling in key situations I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Had a Ohio State team fumble the ball on the one, and then the worst rule in sports where a fumble through the end zone results in a touchback for the other team comes into play, so they miss out on a touchdown there. You have what's their face? The Penn State is,
Interception.
yep, the interception at the 3 yard line with 10 seconds left. That's unacceptable. You have the you're at the Ohio State one again, a second time with a chance to tie it with 5 minutes left. Can't get it done, and then Ohio State just kills the clock. So, kind of like you said, classic Big Ten football, classic James Franklin, Ryan Day,
Yeah.
kind of the battle of the choke artists.
Yeah.
James Franklin kind of regains his title as the top choke artist. And
Yeah, I kind of wanted to get into that with James Franklin because there's been some is like it was a relatively controversial day in College Station, College Park at Beaver Stadium with a lot of boos for Franklin, a lot of "we want you fired" stuff. Obviously, the Jason Kelce stuff that came out later around the stadium, and I get it. The numbers against the top five, top 10, and ranked teams in general are unbelievably bad, and frankly unacceptable. But at the same time, you don't nec you're not Ohio State. You don't quite have that expectation that you've turned this program from what was literally one of the worst in the Big Ten for multiple years in a row. I know they have history, but he's the one that has turned it around. And I lost my train of thought, but I just don't see it. You don't have the expectation there to, yeah, you got to win some of them. And if you don't end up making this playoff, ultimately, yeah, it's going to fall on you. I guess, where do you fall on James Franklin? Should he be fired or not?
I don't think he should be. Oh, let me answer the question with a question: is what does, and not to you because you're not the administration, you're not the guy with the bag paying people or firing people, but it's what does Penn State view itself as a sporting
Yeah.
institution or as a football program? Are you okay with being a second tier program that in this expanded playoff can fight and can say, "Look at us, we're the 8 seed. We're gonna get shit on every time we play a real team." If you're okay with that, he stays because.
It's like Jim Harbaugh to me, but even worse, in that Michigan arguably has higher expectations. And James Franklin has exceeded what Jim Harbaugh was doing in the first 7 years at Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, Franklin did get a Big Ten title in what, year 3 or 4 or 5 behind Saquon. I know what you're saying. I'm just like, we've seen time and time and time and time again that he's not going to win the big game,
Yeah.
which means, again, you have to ask yourself, are you okay with that? And to be fair, it's all about money now. I'm sure Penn State football makes money being in the Big Ten and having these conferences. Now that they are going to sit there and get this exposure in the playoff, they'll get some more money. If you're okay with that, you keep him. If your aspirations are higher, you have to find someone better. That's kind of the thing is, where who are you going to go for?
Yeah, right.
You going to turn around and, I don't know, I mean, you going to call Kurt Cignetti up and say, "Hey man, you
Yeah.
threw your JMU transfers for another year. What are you going to do?" So I understand that, but I am kind of in the boat where I think maybe you have to accept who you are
I
and kind
agree.
of run with it.
I agree.
Maybe
It's kind of.
you know what they could do? Sorry to cut you off.
No.
They could get their own Connor Stallions and start videotaping practices.
There
Maybe
you
they'll win a
go.
big game then.
There you go.
Video game.
I was just my last point was I'm gonna like compare it to like an Ole Miss situation, even though I think overall I would put Penn State slightly above Ole Miss program wise, but I think it's comparable to the Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss situation. It's just like I think you've kind of capped out what this program was meant to be.
Agreed.
Other college football stories, like you mentioned, it was kind of the other power. I call them the other Power Four conferences, not the ones not called the SEC and the Big Ten, kind of throwing up on themselves as far as their chances for the playoff. You had Texas Tech beat Iowa State, Houston, a really bad Houston team beat Kansas State, and then the kind of the big one for me was a lot of people surprised by Louisville beating Clemson pretty handily. Are all three of those teams done?
I mean, if they're going to try and get in as an at-large bid, yes. If they still have a path to a conference title game and they can clinch the automatic bid,
Yeah.
I don't know the theoretical probabilities. And now that you no longer have divisions in all these conferences, and now that you have these 18 team conferences with four teams that are 7-1 or 6-2, I don't know how these tiebreakers go. So off the top of my head, I can't tell you. I need to
Yeah.
dig more into it, but as at-large teams, yes, they're done. The last thing I
The,
had
yeah, go
for college is Carson Beck. He was going to torpedo Georgia's chances at a title. 12 interceptions in the last 4.5 games. That is unacceptable. I think last year or last week, it was either here or just talking amongst friends, but he walked into the season as presumed number one pick. And with the way he's played,
Yeah.
he might not even be a first rounder anymore. So maybe he's looking at coming back to school again and trying to improve his draft stock for next year. But he.
And you look at this, like they're like, I think most people regard them as probably the second best team behind Oregon right now. They've had their scares along the way, obviously the loss to Alabama, but their season is very much not over in terms of they have a lot of work to do. They play Ole Miss at Ole Miss next weekend, and then George, or sorry, Tennessee the week after. So a lot more work. And then obviously the Georgia Tech rivalry game done the season. So a lot of work to be done there for Georgia just to get to make sure that they're in this SEC championship with a chance at an at large, or sorry, an at large a bye, sorry.
Correct. I don't have anything else than college football.
No, let's move over to the NFL. Like always, we start with the hometown team, the NFL Football Lions. I don't know why I said it like that. Just another gritty win. They continue to show why they're the, in my opinion, best team in the NFL. Obviously, you can't truly say that with an undefeated Chiefs team that's won two straight Super Bowls, but wasn't quite the explosion that you've seen in the last couple of weeks, and it didn't need to be. They kind of got their lead, took advantage of some miscues by Jordan Love, obviously the interception to end the half. And Rick kind of played like un-Lions-like in that they didn't need to be aggressive. They kind of were able to build up the lead and take their foot off the gas, and that's and just kind of kill the clock until this one ended, which is a nice way to see that they can win like that, as opposed to kind of the last couple of weeks where they've just exploded offensively.
Yeah, I actually think this was exactly a Lions-like win where you beat down Green Bay. I understand the final score was 24-14, but that was not 24-14. When you watch that game, Green Bay, a garbage time touchdown changes nothing for me. You dominate
Yeah.
the whole time. Obviously, you're right. Jordan Love donates a touchdown to you, and he was also kind of hurt himself. So with the limited
Right.
mobility, as soon as they got behind, it kind of became an issue. And I think you saw
I don't know
Malik.
why they played him in that game in
Yeah, you saw
general.
Malik Willis at times. That was an interesting choice, but I think this was kind of the perfect game where you've always had the Jared Goff, oh, can you do it outdoors? Oh, the Tua arm, it goes limp and he can't throw it. And granted, it wasn't cold out. You had elements, you had Lambeau Field, and you did exactly what you do to everybody else. You run all over them, you control the game. And kind of like I've kind of basically said for the past 2 months, this is the kind of football that travels. This is the kind of football that plays indoor, outdoor, and outer space, underwater. If there is a way to play the sport, this is the type of way that will always work. So that's awesome to see you kind of get to shake off that stupid narrative in the back of your head. No one has to sit here and say, oh, well, Jared Goff can't do it anymore. So that's nice to see. I mean, you look at some of the other statistics that were floating around. I don't know if you saw this. Amon-Ra St. Brown has caught his last 30 targets.
I hadn't seen that.
That's ridiculous. 30 straight complete passes to Amon-Ra when targeted. That's incredibly impressive. Obviously, that kind of ties hand in hand with the Jared Goff playing well and the Jared Goff having more offensive touchdowns than incompletions and everything. It just kind of goes hand in hand, and it's beautiful. This is, like I said, I am kind of ready to call this the best team in football. I'll talk about the Chiefs later, where I understand they're undefeated, but you're just
They're
winning.
not doing it in the same
They're just
way the
winning
Lions
these
are.
3-point games, 5-point games, overtime games, and the Lions are just shit canning everybody. So I'm okay with saying it's the best team in football. They add a pass rusher. We'll get into kind of the trade deadline stuff, but in terms of the actual what happened on the field Sunday, anything else before we get into the kind of the actual team roster construction and what happened with the trade deadline day today?
Not really. Let's kind of get into today.
All right. Za'Darius Smith, the long-awaited edge rusher trade has happened. The Lions, I think, send a fifth and a sixth and get back a seventh alongside Za'Darius. I mean, this is, realistically speaking, the best pass rusher that was ever going to be available. I know we love to bring up, oh, Maxx Crosby, and I know it was, oh my God, Myles Garrett, and oh my God, Trey Hendrickson, and you know, maybe if the Bengals season goes a couple bounces the other way, maybe Trey Hendrickson would have been available, but with them just seemingly holding on to some form of life, he never became a realistic target. And Za'Darius Smith was the best pure pass rusher you were going to find. And he's absolutely going to help this team not be forced to blitz at the rates that they have the last couple weeks. He's obviously not Aiden Hutchinson. He doesn't play the run the way Hutch did. He's a pure pass rusher, but he's very, very good at doing that. And so that'll be nice when you get teams into that kind of third and long. It's Za'Darius, get your old ass out there and go tackle the dude. You've got him for the rest of this year. He's under contract through 25, so you can kind of form a nice tandem with Hutch for next season and you move forward. So I'm very glad this has happened. I was honestly getting a little nervous that it took him so long to do it because in the span of Hutch breaking his leg, I feel like almost a month passed and the Lions just kind of sat there quietly, and you didn't even really hear rumors until a couple of days ago where it's like, oh, the Lions have been calling about Za'Darius Smith. So glad it happened, and now they can kind of focus on getting the job done and going to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl.
It just makes it ever more clear. I don't know why it wouldn't be at this point, given you're 7-1, and like we talked about, arguably the best team in football right now, that the goal is to win a Super Bowl, and anything less than that is a failure at this point. I'm sorry for this year and next year.
Agreed.
And that's what these types of moves are for. I'll compliment Brad Holmes again in that, like, you were able to do it. I know he's an older player, only under contract for this year and next year, but for little to no stakes. And I think Cleveland fans, from what I saw online, were a little frustrated with the return. Not only did you get a player, but you did it at a low risk. So, like you said, checks it off what they needed to do, and now we can move on with our goals for the rest of the season.
Yep. Talking about teams whose goals for the rest of the season have left themselves, the New Orleans Saints. Dennis Allen becomes a second head coach to be fired after they lose to the Panthers. Throwback to 2 months ago where we were looking at this like, oh my God, is this the greatest offense in NFL history? And it was just Carr throwing nukes to Rashid Shaheed. And I understand they've been banged up. Shaheed is now out for the season, the offensive line in and out. Then Chris Olave gets killed because Derek Carr is throwing hospital passes like a prime Matthew Stafford with Megatron. And just it had to happen. I mean, I think the New Orleans Saints, for some reason, have just refused to rebuild, and they've just done this like progressive prolonging of blowing it up for the last two, three, maybe even four seasons since Sean Payton left them and Drew Brees left
Since
them. And
Drew,
you kind of just sat there and it's like, dude, like, just move on. Because now you, and like they kept doing this, like, oh, we're gonna add years to the deal and extend it and extend it. And they basically started every like NFL financial season like $80 million over the cap, and somehow at the end of it got under the cap for the actual season. It was genuinely impressive, and it's kind of the poster child for, oh, the cap's not real and you can just play as many gymnastics as you want with it. But they start making some trades. Marshawn Lattimore, we'll talk specifically about that. I think they sent some other kind of just older pieces in. It's needed. It's well overdue.
Accept your fate.
I guess the last thing I really have to say is Clint Kubiak went from being a 2025 NFL head coach to nobody's heard his name, and he might have had the quickest disappearance from public view since Jeb Bush in the 2016 election. But yeah, good for the Saints that they finally kind of ripped the Band-Aid off. And yeah, you can't lose seven straight games, can't lose to that Panthers team. They fucking suck.
I love the stuff online that the Saints players were posting. And like there it was like, man, we lost to this. It was Cam Jordan. We lost to the State Saints. And somebody on the Panthers replied, bro, we literally have the same record.
Yeah, I didn't see any of that, but that's awesome. I agree. Other stuff, I mean, the Chiefs continue to win these just random close games. An
They do it
overtime,
every time.
yeah, it's an overtime win against Bucks. That's, I think, the Saints net or the Saints, the Chiefs now have one of the longest streaks in NFL history of team not giving up 28 or more points. They were kind of flashing graphics about that last night. I mean,
Teetering with it.
yeah, DeAndre Hopkins looks kind of, I'm not going to say
Like he
rejuvenated, but it
belongs.
looks like he can add something for them that they didn't have,
Yep.
which is kind of your middle ground possession receiver. Obviously, you have Xavier Worthy to take the lid off the defense. You have Travis Kelce, Mr. kind
He's
of.
back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to say he was never not back. It was always kind of, look, he's older. Why waste him in September when we need him for February? But
Right.
he's kind of Mr. Improvise and Mr. Backyard Football when the play breaks down and he somehow always gets open. So I can see the Chiefs just kind of continuing to run these games, and more power to him, I guess. So hopefully we can see a kind of a generational Super Bowl, the 19-0 Chiefs versus the 18-1 Lions, and just have the entire country shut down for one night so we can watch the greatest Super Bowl ever.
Greatest Super Bowl ever. I love
And
it. Around the league, what I had around the league, the Ravens continue to kind of cement their stake as the third best team despite having three losses. I think they're pretty clearly, if the Lions and Chiefs are the greatest Super Bowl ever, a Ravens in the Super Bowl would be a close second. I know they have three losses, so you can't say that on paper, but they absolutely smoke the Broncos, who I think people forgot. Or you were kind of like, I was kind of like, oh, the Broncos are 5-3. And then you looked at who they played to get there, and they played nobody. They play a good team, and they kind of get reminded that they're a fringe wild card team at best. And that offense looks unstoppable. We mentioned Jared Goff, but I think Lamar Jackson is probably my favorite for the MVP at this point. Him or Josh Allen, and I would say Jared Goff is probably third on that list for me. You can correct me if you think that's wrong.
I don't. With the last couple weeks, the way they've gone, where you score 50 on the Titans, but you don't actually need to do anything on the offensive side, that hurts you because you don't get to put the stats up. Then this week, they didn't really have to throw because, once again, they were leading the whole time in the elements. And it maybe the rest of the season, Jared Goff can kind of give a push, and maybe there's some kind of, I don't want to say bettor's fatigue, maybe there's some kind of MVP fatigue with Lamar Jackson and the whole, oh, well, we gave it to him last year. He continues to disappoint in the playoffs, that he can kind of give you some help. But you're right. Josh Allen has been superb for the Bills. They're looking like a very, very complete team. And if you go back to the way we talked about them, we thought they were taking a step back with all the old guys leaving and Diggs leaving, and they've kind of just put it all together and they look just as good as they used to. So more, and the other thing with Josh Allen, I don't know if I mentioned this last week and when I wanted to, he's taking care of the football. One of my biggest knocks with him before was this guy, like Jordan Love, just throws interceptions for fun and is always at or near the top or directly at the top for interceptions. Like, Josh, I can't trust you if you're going to donate 1.5 possession to the other team every week, and he's completely cleaned that up. He's playing good football. They've kind of leaned into the run game with James Cook a little bit more than they used to,
What I
and
was going to
they're a
say.
very kind of complete team, and they're not going to be fun to play against in the playoffs.
Yeah. The next storyline I wanted to talk about was the NFC West as a whole. You have the 5-4 Cardinals leading the division, and everybody is either 500 or better. Who is somebody 4-5? The Seahawks are
Seattle's four
four
and
and
five.
five. Yep. But everybody alive in that division, everybody at one point in that division. Well, it's probably the Cardinals right now, who are look very, very frisky. Obviously, they beat a Bears team that I think is done given the rest of the schedule they have. But everyone in that division is alive. The Rams are healthy now. At every point in this season, I think you could have said that, wow, look at this team in the NFC West. They could be a problem in the playoffs. And at any point in this season as well, you could have said, wow, that team stinks to all four of those teams in that division. It's an any given Sunday thing. You like to think the 49ers are the best team in that. Obviously, they're 4-4 and they had a bye this week. But I don't know. Kyler Murray's playing, didn't have the greatest game. He only had 4.5 fantasy points, but they find a way to smoke the Bears and make the Bears look kind of pathetic. And Josh Gannon is frisky, I guess. So I don't know. This is a wacky division. No team's good, no team's bad. I thought it was Seattle and San Francisco. Now it looks like it's the Rams and Arizona. Who knows?
So I'm glad you mentioned the NFC West. That's something I had. All the teams are alive mathematically, but I think Seattle's dead. Their last 2 weeks have been disastrous. Against Buffalo, you had Geno Smith crying on the sideline, and then last week he proceeds to throw
Terrible
two
loss.
interceptions inside the 10-yard line, and I think he had a third one at some point in the game. I think Seattle's kind of at a point where they've realized, look, man, we have a really good roster, but our quarterback's a muppet, and we're not going to win anything with him. That kind of happened last year as well, where everyone was like, "Oh my God, Geno Smith!" Or it was, maybe it was 2 years ago when they kind of had that first resurgence. It was Geno Smith, Geno Smith, and then the league remembers that, oh, Geno Smith's not a great quarterback. He's not a good quarterback. He's probably not even an average quarterback. He's a below average quarterback at best, and he kind of takes him out of games at times. So while Seattle is only one game behind the Cardinals mathematically, I do think they're done. You mentioned the 49ers. They're going to start to get healthy. CMC's practice window for his Achilles tendonitis or whatever bullshit they kind of diagnosed him with at the start of the season. He's coming back. So that kind of just that puts the fear back into the 49ers. You have the Rams with their pass catchers both back, even though Puka Nacua decides to throw a punch because maybe his knee just wasn't feeling very good. So he wanted to take kind of a week off. I don't know if you saw that, but.
No.
Yeah, he was kind of game time decision with the knee. They're like, all right, he's good to go. And then just right at the start of the game, throws a punch and gets ejected like an idiot. But that's the NFC West. Speaking of ejections, do we want to talk about Brian Branch?
Yeah, I guess we kind of missed that in our game. I'll be honest, I don't like have a true opinion on it because like it was a bad hit.
It was.
And I think it's worthy of an ejection. My problem is that like it's not called consistently to where like you see that multiple times a game that where it's not an ejection. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying, and I think maybe the perfect example is when Chris Olave got hit, there wasn't an
Yeah.
ejection. I think
Right.
Devontae Smith got hit pretty hard in the Eagles-Jags game. There wasn't an ejection there. So you're right. I
I'm
think
okay
they're.
with it being an ejection. It's just like you said, it's not called with enough consistency for me to really like the call.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it was earned. That wasn't even really bang bang. Like, I mean, he took two steps after the
Yeah.
ball was out of the
Yeah.
receiver's hands and then
It was
proceeded to
bad.
kind of like it was a bad hit.
Yeah.
That's one of the few times in college where a targeting review is pretty quick and they don't have to sit there and judge all the formulas. Like they just sit there, no, yeah, we're tossing the kid for that. And I think it was absolutely a deserved ejection. I don't really understand the outrage from all the Detroit fans where it's like, dude, like based on the way the rules are written, that's an ejection. Now, you might not like the rules, but that is not an excuse to not follow them. That was a stupid hit. Absolutely. Like, honestly, if Branch was more aware and maybe I'm not going to say headhunting, but if he was more interested in kind of playing the incomplete pass, he could have picked that off. So,
I didn't see the play live, so.
yeah, it is what it is. Again, I don't think, unless I'm mistaken, he's not suspended or anything for a game. It's not like college where, oh, you get tossed in the second half, you have to miss the first half of the next game or any of that bullshit. So, it is what it is. It happened. Didn't cost the team. They come through anyway. Kirby Joseph, obviously, with the pick six, in onwards and upwards to the Texans. I have much more to say there.
Yeah. Other storylines?
Dallas Cowboys, speaking of teams
Yeah.
whose hopes and dreams have been seasons have been derailed, kind of like the
Poof.
Saints. We should have just gone right into it once we mentioned the Saints, but I think we both talked about in the preseason, this is a team that could implode quickly, given that you had no contracts, they all seem to hate each other, and now you're kind of seeing it. I understand they've had some injuries on the defensive end, on defensive side, but it's football. Everyone has injuries. Get over it.
Right.
Dak Prescott's now, I believe, if he's either on IR or he's just long term, like a couple weeks absence. They're going to be running Cooper Rush at QB1. CeeDee Lamb's just kind of 50-50. It seems like the
It.
players are taking shots at Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is taking shots at radio hosts. You've got more and more talk about Jerry losing his mind. And if maybe this is the one part that I didn't know until this year. When they do their little stadium tours of AT&T or whatever it is, it's during like practice and team meeting where like you'll interact with the players. It's not
Yeah.
obviously part of the tour, but they were
It's
talking
like
how
they're in a zoo.
yeah,
Yeah.
the players are sitting there trying to do their work and you've got people walking around. Now, yeah, they might be behind closed doors, but I don't think I'd like my work very much if I was sitting in the lab and I knew that just walking around at any given point was hundreds of people. So I think that's
Right.
insane. I've never heard of anything like that. Like, yes, you have stadium tours, but it's done in the off season. It's not done in season when the players are trying to work. So that
Right.
part's insane to me. It just seems like this is kind of set to fully go off the rails. You hate to see it because it could happen.
He won't do this, but like, why not get rid of Micah Parsons and just get the world and truly blow it up? I know why he won't do it, because he's old and refuses to accept that that's probably where they should go next with it. But why not?
Yeah, I think the other issue is you just paid your quarterback, so you're kind of stuck there. Like
Right.
they're
I
kind of
agree
in a
with that.
Daniel
That's true.
Jones 2 years ago situation where obviously Dak is not Daniel Jones. Dak is a probably above average NFL quarterback, but
Yep.
you're paying him $60 million, and $60 million does not say you get to be above average. $60 million means you have to be with Patrick Mahomes as one of the two or three best quarterbacks in football, and he's not.
Right.
So you're stuck there. I'm not going to sit there and hate on CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb's sensational. He's earned his
Right.
contract and. Kind of unfortunate that he's going to be playing now with some tomato cans at QB while Dak gets healthy, but you just hate to see that happen to that kind of organization. You hate to see it. Last thing, I guess maybe you very briefly mentioned it with teams whose kind of seasons have been derailed. The Chicago Bears
Yeah.
didn't kind of get just dummied by the Cardinals where you kind of had a relatively tight first half and then somehow Amari DiMercato with 50 seconds left or with breaks some just insane run for 50 yards to score a touchdown, and the Cardinals were playing for a field goal to make it an 8-point game, and then suddenly, boom, you get a touchdown, you go into half kind of shell shocked, it's 21-9, and you're thinking to yourself, what? You had DJ Moore walk off the field
Yep.
in play, and I didn't read further into it. People were talking, maybe he's hurt, maybe he didn't know what happened, but like you can't have that as a look. You've got players taking shots at the coaches after last week. You have coaches taking shots at the players. You had a defense that looked like, I'm not gonna say quit, but they got manhandled. James Conner, I love James Conner. He's really grown on me the last 2 years,
Yeah.
the way he runs. It's kind of like Isaiah Pacheco where he runs angry, he falls forward, and he's going to hit you.
He's had a pretty long career now,
Yes,
too,
he
as far as the
has.
running back's
Yes, he
concerned.
has. So they kind of just imposed their will that the offense could do nothing in the second half for the Bears.
Yeah. And now, like I mentioned, their schedule 4-4. They'll play a bad Patriots team next week, but after that, they'll have all six division games. Remember, are all 6-3 or better, and then the 49ers and the Seahawks.
So yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Maybe the Chicago team, and we're gonna sit there and say, oh, the season's derailed. But maybe we thought they were ahead of schedule, when they probably weren't this with a rookie quarterback.
Right.
So I just think that they need to, fire their head coach, Matt Eberflus. I think most people kind of accept this and realize he's an idiot. And I'm pretty sure the McCaskies are kind of known for not firing people mid-season. So I guess we'll see what happens with this Bears team and if kind of the cabin pressure continues to kind of lose itself. But more power to us. That's like kind of, let's say, one less team to worry about in the North.
Yep. The last story I wanted to talk about is the Eagles. They beat the Jacksonville Jaguars, almost blow the game. They had a big lead, and Jacksonville kind of came back and almost took that one from them. I just want to talk about how weird that situation is. You had an Eagles team that has had a lot of expectations the last couple of years. They, I believe, were 2-2 at one point. They've won 4 in a row. Correct me if I'm wrong. And want to fire Sirianni. They wanted to fire him in the offseason. They wanted to fire him to, when they were 2-2 this year. And now you're still in a situation where, like, you don't know if you have this guy, but the way the NFC shapes out right now, you might be the second or third best team in the NFC as it stands today.
Yeah, completely agree. That's interesting. I'll give you their team that they're going to be competing against in division, the Washington Commanders.
Yeah.
This is kind of going to segue into the NFL trade deadline stuff. They kind of make the biggest move of the trade deadline. They trade for Marshawn Lattimore, who, when healthy, is a great cornerback. They kind of add to their defense and say, you know what? We're 6-2. We believe in ourselves. We think we have our quarterback of the future, and it's time to go. In a division race with the Eagles, obviously there's the classic statistic: every year somebody goes from worst in the division to first in the division. They want it to be them. They don't want it to be Arizona. So they make a move where they think, you know what, this guy can help us now. We're good enough now. Let's do it. So more power to him there. You had Mike Williams get traded to the Steelers, and I understand the Steelers need play callers, but I don't love the fit. I think he's pretty much George Pickens, but older, where he's a contested catch guy. And I don't think that really changes much for you. I think they would have been
Yeah.
better served. And this is kind of funny given what happened in the offseason, but they would have been better served with a Diontae Johnson type guy who can win the short to medium routes and can kind of move the sticks. Kind of like a poor man's Amon-Ra, or prime example, Diontae Johnson.
Yeah.
I don't know if the kind of the same Hassan Reddick rules played there for the Steelers where they weren't allowed to trade back for him or whatever was going on, but while yes, you need more playmakers outside of Pickens, I just don't think that Mike Williams is the kind of receiver that you're really looking for because you already have Pickens. It's the same type of guy. It's the same archetype. So didn't love that, but you know, they're loading up. The Steelers think they're in a race with Baltimore for the division. So
Division.
gotta get better. So we'll see there.
If you had to guess how many teams in the NFL had 2 losses or more,
Oh, it's like 8 or 9, isn't it?
nine.
Yeah, that I think. I don't know if you were talking to me about this weekend or if you were talking about this last week of the
I think
podcast.
we talked about it last week on the
You had the
podcast. Now
perfect take. The NFL is so many teams have just packed it in and are just openly quitting that it's kind of making some of these games unwatchable.
I think they're able to too, just because of like the league doesn't have a problem with it because of how much the sport still is growing and how much of it, like how dominant it is in American culture right now, that they can get away with this.
Yeah,
We'll see for how long though. Like with anything, people come to realize it. So.
Yeah, I have nothing else from the NFL. You?
No, that's all I've got. Any other sports topics you want to get to today?
Real Madrid suck. Some of the worst kind of performances I've seen in probably 5 years. Since the last time we sucked, so that pisses me off. But
So what's the problem? They added the big guy in the offseason and still can't.
the players are it's kind of the Holy Trinity. The board, which kind of buys and sells players, has not built a team, and honestly, haven't built a team in probably 6 or 7 years. Like, I
What do you
understand
mean by
that.
that? They've won a Champions League in that
Yes,
six or
but that
seven years.
doesn't. There's a different. I understand they win things, but you don't have a team. So for the last. Let's get into it. Fuck it. It's the end of if people make it this far and they like soccer, they'll love listening to me rant. But since 2019, Real Madrid have bought 3 defenders. That's unacceptable to buy 3 defenders in 5 years, two of which were free transfers. They didn't even have to buy them. They signed them for free. And now, granted, they were good. David Alaba and Rudiger are good players, but if you don't invest in the defense, you can't turn around and then be shocked when your defense fucking sucks. They leak goals like it's their fucking job, and they're right back right now. Starting when Danny Carvajal had a kind of a nasty ACL tear about a month ago, and the backup is one of the worst players I've seen. I say this with like half confidence. Right now, in my current state at 25 years old, with likes alcohol, likes to have fun with his friends, but also likes to go to the gym. If I got to run at him for a game, I could succeed. He's that fucking bad. He does nothing for the team. Has no cohesion, no ability to stay connected with the rest of the line. So you always think that he's playing guys on sides, cannot go forward, cannot track back. He's pathetic. The left back sucks, and there's no one there to replace him because they haven't bought anybody. Then you move forward. The team doesn't have a right winger and hasn't had a right winger since Gareth Bale. The team doesn't have a striker. It hasn't truly had a striker since Cristiano Ronaldo. I know Benzema was there, but he didn't really play as a striker. He played as a number 10 where he wouldn't really sit in a box. He would just kind of float around there. So you don't have one of those. You have your top three attackers are all left wingers. Vinicius Jr. is a left winger. Kylian Mbappe is a left winger. And Rodrigo's a left winger. Guess what? You can't play with three left wingers together. You can't. Jude Bellingham, who had a sensational season last year, they've rotated the system to bring Mbappe in and have completely neutralized Bellingham's importance. So this is a return to the coach. You had a system that won you a Champions League, and you bring in Kylian Mbappe and you change the system to obviously accommodate him as well. But now you killed Jude Bellingham. Jude was so good being closer to the box and the other team's goal, and he kind of operated as like a shadow striker, if you will. And now he's sitting there playing left midfield, is almost a def he's doing more defending than going forward, which is not what he is. He's not a road runner. He's not there to kind of like to do the dirty work. He's the guy that can make things happen. And then obviously the third trinity is just the players. You got to play. Right now we have a CDM who is ridiculously bad, and he the second goal, he had a stupid pass that he gives the ball away, and instead of then tracking back, which is kind of the cardinal rule, is, oh, I made the mistake, I need to bust my ass to fix it, he walks back, loses a runner, and that runner gets a tap in after the goalie makes a great save. The players fucking suck, the coach is losing his mind, and the board is not putting together a competent team, so everything's going wrong.
Do you think that's because it's a board and it's hard to make a decision as a whole, as opposed to having
No,
one guy like a
because like
GM?
when I say board, I mean actually Real Madrid have one of the best kind of strategies where you've got your scouting network, you have one chief scout who they love and they kind of listen to him a lot, and he does a lot of the kind of the heavy hitting where he says, all right, this is a guy worth it. He takes that name to Florentino Perez. Florentino Perez sits down with Jose Angel Sanchez, Mr. JAS himself. And they say, do we want to buy this? Do we want to spend money? And they've kind of been notoriously cheap the last couple of years. You know, if you finance a $1 billion stadium renovation, that might happen. Money might be a little tight, even though they like to always flaunt how much revenue they have and how they're at the top of all these super charts and whatnot. But it's actually it's pretty good. Like when I say bored, I don't mean that you've just got a room of 10 dudes in suits and it's Moneyball where they're sitting there saying, well, who do we like next? And we don't have that going on. It's ridiculous. So there's my Real Madrid rant.
Thank you. I now have a better understanding of the situation, and so do our
It's
listeners.
pathetic, but is what it is. Yeah, that was kind of a nice rant to take us to the kind of the basically the hour mark. I have nothing else. Do you?
No, I'm good today. How should I close out the show today? Go green. We got a basketball and two basketball games and a football game until our next recording. So go green.
Go white.